Who's our guest intro this week?
We don't have one.
Oh, come on!
That's right. Reeve dropped the ball again. So, this is your friendly Tribcast engineer informing you that there will be no celebrity intro this week. And now, here's the only podcast host who's so young.
He thinks Paul McCartney's band was Wings.
Reeve Hamilton.
Thank you, Todd. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the final week of March, which went by very quickly, I must say. We also have our first ever Tribcast sponsor. So this Tribcast is brought to you by Opportunity Days, the shared plan for regional opportunity at the University of Texas at El Paso, which will be happening on May 2nd and 3rd. Joining us here, maybe there, who knows, is editor Emily Ramshaw.
Hi, Reeve.
Reporter Kate Galbraith.
Hello.
You need to get closer to your mic.
Oh, I'll try again. Hello.
And reporter Jay Root.
Also known as?
The Golden Voice.
Thank you.
Golden Voice Root.
I'm here.
The yes. Golden Warbler.
What about my nickname?
The Environment. This is getting embarrassing. We all have nicknames at the Tribune.
I'm not sure
it's
I
like
do.
Being a WWE
what
wrestler.
What is your nickname, Reeve?
Well, I can't tell you.
Okay.
We're going to be talking about healthcare matters and environment matters and other topics.
Political matters. Let's just go around
tuned.
The room here.
Yeah, there'll be no criminal justice matters this week, though, I don't think.
Unless you decide to talk about Trayvon Martin.
That's right. We'll stay tuned. Who knows? So let's get going. This is the last day of arguments over Obamacare and the Supreme Court. Obviously, Texas is one of the 26 states that's part of that lawsuit. People are saying that the law is sort of, you know, in a precarious position at this point. Emily, what does this mean for Texas? The rest of the country, we don't care
right,
about.
Right, who
just
cares
Texas.
About them? Well, first of all, as we speak right now, the arguments have ended. So we are waiting, I guess, you know, probably a minimum of 3 months to find out what the verdict is. And basically, you know, the big question for everybody, the big question for Texas is what happens with the individual mandate. That's the rule that basically requires everybody to have health insurance. There are a lot of provisions that have actually, you know, Texas has more uninsured than almost anyone. There have been a lot of provisions of federal health reform that have required Texans to get on insurance rolls starting in 2014. So basically, I mean, the big question is going to end up being, you know, whether all these millions of Texans who are currently uninsured are forced to purchase insurance or are required to have state subsidized insurance. So that's sort of the lingering question that we won't know an answer to for a long time.
Do you guys think this is this going to be make or break for Obama's reelection chances?
You know, I've been sort of thinking about this and wondering what is going to be the political impact of it. And I think that Obamacare, which you have to give Republicans credit for it, Democrats now call it Obamacare. So they were successful, certainly, in branding this, number one.
Although, but I will say, I called it Obamacare early on the podcast and got some angry emails about it. But I've always been surprised that Democrats didn't just accept that as a, you know, they accepted that as a pejorative instead of just trying to own it as something else.
Yeah, well, but I think that it's clear to me that in 2010, I mean, was there a bigger issue than Obamacare in the elections? I mean, that was, you know, a really huge part of that election.
But since then, haven't polls shown growing support for it among people as they've sort of settled in?
I think it's about
50-50. It is about
50-50.
But didn't it go from much less than that? Didn't it go from, like, way out of whack against it to 50-50?
What I'm talking about, though, is not so much like, would you just put this on a grid and say, can somebody get a poll survey advantage? I'm saying that it really it gave Republicans a lot of motivation to go out and vote against Obama, and the election was nationalized, and you had a huge sweep all over the South. Democrats fell, you know, like timber. And I would not be surprised if actually Obama does not actually get an advantage now, because the issue kind of is taken away, and Republicans can't use that
if
as much.
If it's struck down.
Yeah, I'm saying if it's struck down.
Well, also, there's Romney, you know, who might be the nominee and
right,
has its own
Romney Care. Right, and Romney Care was basically, you know, what Obamacare was sort of, you know, modeled on. But I mean, I think, you know, Obamacare is, for better or for worse, the defining aspect, I think, of the Obama administration thus far. I mean, if it's a, if it's struck down, that is a huge, huge blow to him. At the same time, right, if it's struck down, it there's much less, you know, campaign fodder for Republicans out on the trail saying, you know, beating the drum. I mean, you had lawmakers, you had Greg Abbott there this week, you know, to do nothing other than really show moral support, you know. But again, we've been hearing about this for so long. I think it's going to be interesting to see the point this wraps up. Let's see, we're in March now. You know, it'll wrap up before conventions. It'll be interesting to see where we are going and whether we're revising what we have right now, whether the whole thing is struck down or just elements of it. So it'll be interesting.
I think that, that if it does fail, I think that Democrats could possibly have some anger going into the 2012 elections and say, you know, they've taken away healthcare and, you know, this Republican court has taken our healthcare away and, you know, let's go get it back. I think you could make the argument that that could happen.
Is it make or break for Greg Abbott's potential gubernatorial hopes since he's made suing the federal government such a cornerstone of his daily duties?
He's got so many lawsuits, I feel like you can't say one. Yeah, right, exactly. At some point, one of them is going to be successful. No, I don't think this is a, you know, again, just because he's one of many state AGs involved in this. You know, if he goes down with this, everybody else has gone down with it too. So it's not the same fight. So.
Well, and if they lose, you know, then they get to keep talking about how we've got to go in and elect people to, you know, vote this out. And I mean, I think if the potential for, you know, remedial action is there, then that's kind of what you use politically. Say, let's go elect people to make this happen.
Well, do you want to get into a juicier healthcare story? Now that we've dealt with the national problem.
Sure. Well,
you think juicy is the wrong word?
I was going to say juicy rubs me the wrong way on this one, but
that was poorly thought out.
Yep.
Like a lot of the podcasters.
Exactly. There was a kind of interesting story that I worked on this week that looks at this hospital in Victoria. This hospital has been in trouble for a while over allegations that it racially discriminated against three doctors of Indian descent. Now, you know, someone basically sent me something in the mail that was the hospital's hiring policy. And this hospital, unlike pretty much any other hospital in the United States, requires potential employees to weigh a certain under a certain amount, so their body mass index has to be below a certain level if they're going to be hired. And you know, basically the understanding behind this rule was not that, you know, these people cost us too much money in healthcare, not that they're absent from work too much, not that they can't help evacuate people in an emergency, but basically I think that, you know, the direct quote was that it was visually distracting for our patients to have people who are too heavy on the job.
Now I always ask this, and I know it makes it sound sort of, it's sort of a trivializing thing, but it's just an example that I use. But so, like, I go to Bird's Barbershop here in Austin. All of the barbers there have, you know, they're tattooed. They have a certain look. They're all hipsters. They hire people with a certain look. Our company is not allowed to do that.
You are allowed to do that. I mean, you can say, I'm not going to hire someone who's got their nose pierced. I'm not going to hire somebody with tattoos. You can, you know, basically there are a lot of protected classes in Texas. You're protected based on your race, ethnicity, your religion. You're not protected based on your weight. So basically, it's not against the law.
And unlike a tattoo, obviously, there are reasons beyond personal choices that could cause you to be overweight.
Now, that's the rub on this issue. And, you know, while it's not against the law to discriminate against someone because of their weight, it is against the law to discriminate against someone who has a disability. And the question and what's been debated in the courts a ton is whether obesity is a disability. So.
And some other states do prohibit discrimination based on weight. Is that
one
right?
State, Michigan does, and then a bunch of cities do, like San Francisco and Washington D.C. Both say, "Yeah, there's you can't discriminate." So
nobody's fat in San Francisco, though, right?
Exactly.
Not a big deal.
I know.
Yeah, you would think that of all places, Texas might want to look into these sorts of protections.
Yeah, I mean, if Michigan has it, I can only imagine. Texas is like one of the most obese states in the country.
Well, one of the problems also that you pointed out in your story was that their measurement is body mass index and that's sort of questionable, right?
Well, right. Body mass index is considered like basically one of the worst metrics for considering someone's, like, for example, you know, a professional football player might have a body mass index of, you know, over 35, which would be considered, you know, obese, but their body fat percentage might only be 7%, which is like incredibly low. So now there probably aren't all that many linebackers going in to work and at this hospital.
Aren't there gender differences too on?
Totally. Yeah. Like for women, you know, a very high.
I think Jay was just asking generally. He was, yeah. It was a non sequitur. He just wants to know.
Men are from Mars.
Yeah.
Jay's been doing
That's
some light
the
reading.
Future podcast, actually.
Right. The difference between men and women in Texas. Right.
So, are there any broader implications of this? Or is it just sort of a curiosity at this very specific, somewhat embattled hospital?
You know, it's a curiosity, but it also has a lot of hospitals have started implementing a we won't hire you if you smoke policy, which a lot of people have cried foul and said that's, you know, a discrimination issue. These hospitals have said basically, look, you know, if you smoke, you are going to end up costing our health plan more than our other employees. So, you know, we can force you out that way. Baylor, for example, in Dallas doesn't allow it. So, you know, I think it's we're just sort of looking at this new frontier of you know, how things contribute to the costs at your hospital or at your organization. You know, maybe we need to come up with some Texas Tribune hiring rules.
Yeah, we'll put Kate in charge of that committee.
Oh, good. I'll hire only redheads.
And we will have no staff.
The smoking argument seems to be harder to make, though.
I mean
for why that would offend people. I don't know, as a non-smoker myself, I sort of assume that it's a, you know, that just purely is choice. That's a personal choice.
Yeah, right. I mean, if you were really overweight, you know, there are lots of things that can lead to you being, I think people, you know, sort of assume that if you're overweight, this is something in your control and you're, you know, need to just stop eating so much or whatever. I mean, I think there are a lot of people who are obese. There are health issues linked to it. There are, you know, chromosomal endocrine
really well
issues that might lead to you to be obese. So.
So go work at a different hospital.
That's basically what the CEO of the hospital said. He said, you know, you can find somewhere else to work.
Where's the nearest hospital? There's another one in Victoria.
There's another
right?
one in Victoria. Yeah. So.
Okay. Speaking of things that are out of people's control.
What are you? Are
we're
you
moving over to the water use?
I was going to say, are you this saying the environment is out of our control? What are you saying here, Reed?
By the environment, do you mean? Kate?
She's definitely out of your control.
Yeah, she's running amok hiring redheads. Okay, Kate had a story this week about, the need to waste water out in dry Texas.
Right.
Sort of.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, federal crop insurance rules, West Texas farmers tell me, basically incentivize them during big droughts to continue to water their crops like cotton, even past the time that they know they won't grow, in order to get full payout for sort of irrigated land that's a high insurance payout. And if they stop, they might not get that full payout, and the insurance company, you know, this is through sort of federally subsidized crop insurance, and the insurers will ask them to see their electric bills for like how much water you pumped as sort of proof that you did try. And, it's really crushing for some of these guys who have been doing it their whole lives. And they, you know, water's a very precious resource out there. The Ogallala Aquifer is...
The what?
Is, yeah. You want me to say that fast 10 times?
Yes.
Ogallala. it's the aquifer's going down, and people know it's a precious resource, and to waste it is really.
So this is not a story about Texas greedy Texas farmers cheating the people out of their water by just pouring it on dead plants because they want to.
No, it's not. It's them, you know, finding it a little bit heart-wrenching to keep watering even when they know nothing is going to grow. And, you know, they're wasting water. They're, you know, if they planted a crop and even though they knew nothing would grow, the weather was looking so bad, they're wasting seed. I mean, you know, and farmers, yeah, don't like to waste stuff. Nobody does.
What's the effect on the...
Well, I don't know about that.
We're wasting time right now.
That is true.
How devastating, if that's the right word, how big a deal has this been in terms of money and water and...
Well, I talked to one farmer who spent, you know, $25,000 to pump water onto a 175-acre plot that, you know, ultimately didn't... nothing grew there. I mean... That's a lot of money, and he did that so that he could get a higher. He continued to do that so he could get a higher insurance payout. I mean, you know, it's money, it's water, and there aren't any easy. No one was coming up with simple solutions, but maybe there can be a conversation about that.
I should have segued with insurance. That's the clear connection between the previous story and this one.
Next time.
You don't always have to segue. You can just say, now moving on to a new...
I'm not,
moving
I wasn't soliciting advice.
It sure sounded like it.
No, it was. I was observing. I was doing a self-critique. It's been raining a lot, though. Does that mean all this water stuff is pretty much over with? Have we moved on from the drought?
Don't make Kate upset, please.
Oh, God.
Here
She's
we go
gonna
again.
She's going to start screaming Ogallala again.
Just threw gas on the fire there.
Yes, according to this office... drought is the new rain, but that is not in fact true. Travis County, believe it or not, is still 100% in drought as we speak.
Even though it has rained almost every day forever.
Yes.
Including today.
Please don't complain about that.
I'm not complaining, I'm just saying.
That is how serious the drought was last year. How are your weeds, Emily?
They've been just sprouting. I thought you were asking, how is my weed?
Well, also that.
They've Speaking been just, of our hiring policy. Yeah.
They've been just sprouting right up.
Yes.
I missed that one. Was there?
Yeah. That's because
went right over
Jay
my
actually
head
is stoned. Moving on.
Yes.
No, yeah, my lawn is out of control.
My lawn is out of control.
Well,
as well,
I said the other day that I needed to mow the weeds because I have no grass anymore because it died. I mean, I actually ordered new grass last year right before the drought hit, and it was like terrible.
Like, I mean, in the mail you ordered it?
No, I mean, I got some grass and had it installed, and then it died properly.
It's because you weren't reading Kate Galbraith.
Exactly.
That's right. The drought was... on the horizon.
Well, it was before that. I mean, I figured I would be able to save it, but anyway, it's all dead. My yard is atrocious.
So, well, I mean, how long is this going to go on? Does the watering going to have to continue? This is just a situation, and it's going to stay that way.
Well, if there's another big drought, I mean, this could happen again in the Panhandle area with these cotton crops. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, water. Everybody gets tired of me saying this, but water, I think, is, you know, I mean, the State Department just had a study that, like, water conflicts are going to be fought over water. I mean, this is a big deal.
Forget the drug war.
Whiskey for
exactly.
drinking, water for fighting.
Exactly.
Takes the term spillover violence to a whole new level.
Oh.
Thanks.
Look for that in a TT headline coming soon.
I'm filing that one away.
My eyes are watering.
Now,
she's just sad.
Let's move on to something completely different.
Good.
That was a great one.
Jay, what do you want to talk about?
Well, we, as previously arranged, we're going to talk about Joe Strauss. And
who did you arrange this with?
With you. The House, Texas House Speaker Joe Strauss, who has always aroused suspicions among conservatives that he's not one of them, has a real race or could have a real race on his hands. In his district, that's certainly what his opponents are hoping, and they are getting behind this sort of young San Antonio businessman, Matthew Beebe. They tried to take him out. They tried to take him out in the speaker's race 2 years ago. Well, I guess a year and a half ago in 2011, and they failed. And so now they're trying to do it the old-fashioned way by doing it at the ballot box. I think it's probably an uphill climb.
But he has some heavy hitters on his side. Beebe does, right?
Well, I mean, who do you consider a heavy hitter? I mean, he's
Isn't
got a lot.
Freedom Works.
He's got a lot of these conservative activists.
I guess that's a big name. I don't know how heavy they hit.
Is he a Tea Partier?
He is a Tea Partier, mm-hmm. And he's got Kathy Adams, the former Republican Party chair. Has endorsed him. You know, you just have a lot of sort of movement conservatives that are rallying around him. What I think is fascinating about it, though, is that look at what the legislature did. I mean, they cut, $14 billion? They passed what is considered to be the harshest sonogram law in the nation, right?
I mean,
is
absolutely.
And yet it's not enough.
What are their specific complaints against Strauss?
Well, that you know, I've been struggling with that in a way because on the one hand, you know, Strauss says, "Look, I've got a great record. What are you talking about? We cut taxes. We cut the budget. We passed this strict anti-abortion measure."
He has that one quote mocking the TSA bill, though.
Well, there's that. That's really what this is all about. Not all about the TSA bill, but it's all about. It's much more nuanced. It's the quote on the TSA bill that was silly. It was the quote about that he gave to the El Paso Times last year when he said that we can't get our way to prosperity through cuts alone.
His quotes on the women's health program have not been as far right as I think Perry would have liked them to be.
Right. It's basically a degree. It's not being conservative enough. And, you know, in a legislature that has a House that has over 100 Republicans and that has moved pretty far to the right, where you have this supermajority, there's Strauss has sort of become an enemy for the far right. And I think that he I think Strauss has a very good chance to hang on, not only because he understands his district and his district is not. It's not Katy. It's not Collin County. There aren't as many movement conservatives there as there are in a lot of other districts. And I mean, he's got $4 million. I mean, he's going to be able to get his message out to any voter. He could really get a piece of mail to every man, woman, and child in that district if he wanted to.
He is the heavy hitter on his side,
right? He is. But I think that in a race where or in an election when, you know, you could have Santorum could still have enough of a campaign when Texas rolls around to come here and run and you know, gin up turnout. And, you know, unpredictable things can happen. I would say that it would be easier to knock off Strauss in his district than to knock him off as speaker.
Really?
Yeah,
so, I mean, that's interesting because it seems like, you know, he'd have enough of standing in his district that it would be more valuable for them to spend their time and energy on the speaker's race. But you don't think that's the case?
No, because, you know, I went and I talked to a few voters in San Antonio a couple of days ago, and a lot of people don't know that he's the speaker. I mean, it's not a high profile. You know, it's a urban district. It's a wealthy urban district. You do have a lot of voters who obviously do know who he is, but you know, people are busy and they obviously know who the presidential candidates are, but they don't necessarily know who their state rep is, or they certainly it's not on the tip of their tongue, or it's not something that they are thinking about day in and day out. So
what are the demographics of a district that does know who their state rep is? Austin?
West Texas. Rural, sophisticated Republican voters. You've been out to West Texas a lot. Those voters, it's amazing to me how sophisticated they are. They know so much of what's going on and are so well-versed in the issues. I've always been amazed when I talk to them.
People who really need things from someone, you know? I mean, the one-to-one communication is probably a lot more likely in a district like that than, you know, in a big city district.
And that's not just hometown praise. Jay is from East Texas.
Correct. It's one of those things where something unpredictable, you know, could happen. I mean, you could have a lot of people flooding in there, volunteers, and you know, you're talking about 170,000 people in a state house district. It's not like you can, bury somebody in a statewide race. If you can't run TV ads, you can't make a difference. But you know, you can actually block walk and things like that. The old-fashioned sort of shoe leather campaigning can actually make a difference. Again, I mean, I would say that Strauss has a pretty strong advantage here, like really strong advantage. But
does the new timing of the primary help Bibi at all?
I don't really think we know about. No, I think if turnout's really low, this is one of the FreedomWorks
surrogate
guy that I talked to, which is something that is kind of rare to hear this. But there, he said we hope that the turnout is low, which usually people, you know, like to say, oh, of course we want high turnout. But he, you know, he acknowledged that he wanted low turnout and that low turnout would help Matt Bibi because You know, only the really truly committed conservative voters would show up. So,
what? Tell us a little bit about Bibi. What does he do for a living, or has he run before?
He's a political novice, 38 years old, ex-military. Christian conservative, churchgoer, I tell you what I was struck by. I was struck by a couple of things. One was, I was struck with how less heated his attacks on Strauss were compared to, say, Dick Armey and his group, Kathy Adams, who have been very, Michael Quinn Sullivan, who have been far more strident and, very passionate. He was much more, look, I'm running, it's just much about me as it's about Strauss, and I think I'm the true conservative, and he didn't bring up social issues. He didn't bring up a lot of things that I thought he would bring up. The other thing that I was really struck by was how much relish Joe Strauss seems to take with him in this fight. I mean, he was block walking. He had like guys with clipboards, and they were canvassing. And he said, people really underestimate me. They don't think that I like to campaign. I love campaigning. I've been campaigning all my life. I campaigned for Lamar Smith, decades ago. And he really seems to be enjoying himself getting out. This is the first time he's ever had an opponent. And
he hasn't been around that long.
Yeah, he was elected in 2005. So,
Bibi does not become speaker if he wins.
Correct. And that's another one of the little dynamics that I think is sort of interesting is that, okay, so they knock off Strauss. Well, they still don't have a speaker. I mean, all they've done is gotten rid of Strauss in that scenario. They, and what I said was, I asked some of these people, well, you could conceivably end up with somebody worse than Strauss, right? And the thought doesn't seem to have occurred to them.
Well, it's occurred here on the Tripcast. Anyone have anything else to add? I think we're wrapping up time-wise. If you out there in the podcast listening audience have something to add or a question or an observation or advice on how to segue from one topic to another.
Or you'd like to sponsor the Tribcast?
Yeah, if you'd like, now we have sponsors. So if you'd like to sponsor us, don't tell me to find April's thing on the website.
ahinkle@texastribune.org.
How do you spell Hinkle?
ahinkle@texastribune.org.
Right. And of course, she organized the sponsors. We don't really know who they are till we air this, and does not influence us at all. Right. Emily, anything to add? The editor over there?
That's it. Thanks right. for joining us.
No, no, no. I do that. you can also
very rigid,
find
the rules
us
around
on
here.
iTunes and Stitcher and
you can
Facebook.
Find Reeve at that barbershop.
Bird's Barbershop.
With the
See
tattooed hipsters.
Yeah.
I'll be mowing my yard. My weeds, I'm sorry.
All right. Thanks for listening. Wait, never mind. We didn't say the actual email address for questions and comments, which is tribcast@texastribune.org. And so, with that, on behalf of Emily J., Kate, and our producer and introer, Todd, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
Some people want to fill the world with silly love songs.
Oh, but that was a good sing. A good sing. Can I say the word today?
You can say whatever words you want.
You used to say that I couldn't say the word today.
No, no. You personally have a bit of an impediment. You always said Tour Day.
Tomorrow.